You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another Catch Them Doing Something Good edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Our guest today is Dr. Larry Koenig, and let me tell you, this is a very busy man. We've had him on before. We worked a little bit about on his program as it relates to smart discipline, and at that time I knew that I needed to have him back. Let me tell you a little bit about him. After 10 years as a family therapist, Dr. Koenig created the Up With Youth program, which I know has been acclaimed as one of the nation's leading self-esteem workshops for adolescents, with over 100,000 kids having benefited from this program. Each year, Dr. Koenig's nationally known network of speakers presents his parenting seminars to over 500 audiences. Also, Larry is the author of the popular marriage book, Happily Married for Life. And they also have a book for teachers entitled Smart Disciplines for the Classroom. Larry is the author of the original Smart Discipline, which has now been translated in 7 languages. It's been featured on PBS, NPR, People Magazine, and Parents Magazine. Over the last 10 years, Smart Discipline has become one of the most widely used systems of discipline and consequences in America today. Having learned about that program, seen how beneficial it was, when I found out that Larry had the book Happily Married for Life, I asked him to come back on. And Larry, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hey, thanks, Alan. Glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. And I think one of the things that that I thought of when I saw that you had this book as well is how the two things correlate. In other words, if you have a situation to where you have done what you need to do to be happily married for life, how does that relate then to when you have children from a smart discipline standpoint?
I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I have a network of speakers around the country who present my smart discipline parenting programs. And when I came out with the marriage program, I got, you know, some major questions from the presenters. They were saying, why, you know, we're a parenting organization. Why now all of a sudden we're going to have a marriage? And, you're absolutely right. The two are entwined because, kids are so affected by what's going on with their parents. You know, if you show me a child, I work a lot with teachers and schools and that, and of course, there are a lot of behavior problems in schools and that, and almost always you see a child who is misbehaving at school. Well, not so much always, but so very often, you know, that child is parents. The parents are having troubles at home, and then it's reflected in behavior at school and even academic performance. And so it's just undeniable that a child who has parents who are getting along well and is a happy family is going to do so much better in life.
All right. Well, you know, I had a chance to read, and I haven't finished it yet, but I had a chance to read. I'm about halfway through Happily Married for Life. And yeah, one of the things that I saw that was the thread, you touch a lot on the 6 principles that couples need to recognize for a healthy marriage. Can you touch on those for us?
Sure, you know, absolutely, and you know, and one of those things is that one of the things that I like to talk about, and you probably know this from reading the book, is that when we're first in love, you know, before we ever get married, but we're just first in love, no one needs to teach us how to be in love because we already have it down. No one knows how to teach us, or we don't need to be taught how to communicate because we know how to communicate, and that. You know, when you can go out and see people on Friday night when you go out to eat, you can tell the people who are first in love because they are, you know, good eye contact, they're talking, they're just really into each other. And you can see it because everything about them says, you know, I'm into that person, right? And so we do all these different things when we're first in love, and it causes that other person to say, I want to marry you. You no, and the other person says, yeah, okay, yeah, I want to get married too. And then they get married and they stop doing those same things that caused them to fall in love, and so then they really get in trouble. And one of those things that they do when they're first in love, and this is major. This is major because happily married couples do it consistently, and they don't stop doing it once they get married. And that is they focus on the other person's needs. You know, when people are first in love, and you know this, you can think back in the times when you were first in love, and other people, other friends, family members, they're just so into the other person. They're so focused on the other person. And it's kind of like, oh, what do you want to do tonight? Oh, well, what do you want? Oh, no, you tell me what you want to do, because I want to do what you want to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about your day, and tell me more about that. Oh, that was terrible, that was awful, you know, and tell me more about that. So, they spend a lot of time listening to each other, but they're just very focused on the other person's needs. Oh, you need me to go pick up the laundry or the dry cleaning? Oh, I'll do that. I'd be happy to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people that are happily, that stay happily married, stay very focused on the other person's needs. And so you've got two people whose needs are satisfied now because the other person is focused on their needs, and they're helping take care of those things.
Well,
what happens? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, and what I was going to say is that and maybe that was what you were going to say, but it was what happens when one of them stops doing that.
Right. Yeah, therein lies the problem because, you know, life intervenes, you get married, and what happens so very often, at least 75% of the time in marriage, because, you know, we talk about in this country, we talk about 50% of the marriage is failing.
Right.
Everyone's just kind of accepted that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not true. It's 75% of marriages fail. And why is it 75%? Well, mm-hmm. if you look at the 50% of the people that stay married, 50% of those people are miserable in their marriages.
Okay. Good point.
So, and we all know somebody like that, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I've been married 50 years, but, you know, and you look at the marriage and they hate each other's guts, right? So what good is that? Yeah.
Married. Yeah. And from the communication standpoint, I think for everybody that does hear that, you know, if you're a male and you go out with your buddies and you're out having a beer or something like that, it's that guy that talks about how much he hates his marriage or his spouse or whatever. Or in the same sense of the girls go out and they sit around. But I think that what we can do to help those people is don't feed off of it. Don't let them continue. You know, if they're doing that, what I try to do to not get involved with it is say, don't tell me. In other words, I'm not gonna get sucked into this negativity of it. It sounds like your communication needs to be focused with them. But I think too often people jump on the bandwagon, and so they want to kind of synergize with them, so they throw in some other negative things, and now you just have this bitch session that's not doing anybody any good.
Yeah, everybody likes to have some sympathy. But let's go back to your original question, when you know what happens in a typical marriage, 75% of the time, once people get married, they no longer have to worry about getting the other person to marry them, right?
Right.
So now they start focusing on their own needs. They say, well, you know, what about me? Oh, well, you know, I want this. I want to have my career here, and I want to have my hobbies, and I want to have this, and I want to have that. And they get very, very focused on themselves. And then what happens is the other person starts to say, well, what about me?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I got to focus on my needs. If you're going to focus on your needs, well, then I'll focus on my needs. And so they start focusing on their needs, too. And then what happens is that a person's at work, and they're kind of miserable in their marriage now because their needs are no longer being satisfied by the other person. And then they meet somebody at work, and they go out to lunch with them, a person of the opposite sex, and they start talking with that other person, and guess what? That person starts to listen to them. They have good eye contact, they ask questions, they have empathy and everything, and so that starts to feel pretty good. So you start to say, well, gee, you know, that feels wonderful, you know, and gee, you know, the problem is that I'm not in love with my spouse anymore. I still love her, but I'm not in love with her anymore. Or, you know, vice versa. It certainly could be the woman, too. You know, because I'm in love with this person over here because they listen to me, they care about me, they're taking care of my needs, they develop, the relationship develops and everything, and the other person is so focused on that person's needs, and so they start to feel love again. And which feels really good, of course.
Right.
You know, you feel really loved, and your brain actually starts to dump out all these chemicals, all the dopamine gets released in the brain, and the person goes, aha, I'm in love. So if I can just get rid of this person over here, get divorced, and then marry this person over here, then I'll be happy again, right? And, of course, what happens is that, yeah, you get a divorce, and get married to somebody else, and once you get married, same thing happens.
Right.
Stop focusing on the other person's needs. Yeah,
yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, what can the people do to look in themselves? And I know in a statement that I've used is that, you know, rather than looking for the perfect woman or looking for a better woman, I'm going to make myself a better man. What can people do along those lines so that they don't follow that pattern that you've just described?
Yeah, well, this, you know, this is something that I had to do with myself. You know, I was doing a workshop in front of a marriage workshop up in Detroit a number of years ago when I first started doing the marriage workshops. And there were a lot of people there. The room was just packed. And I had a woman that was sitting right at my feet, and she was kind of talking to me while I was talking, which is really disturbing, you know, when you're trying to, you know, do a lecture and that. And she would ask questions, just kind of mumble questions. And one of the questions that she mumbled was, how many times you've been married? You know, she wanted to know. Oh, boy, you know, this is embarrassing. So I said, well, you know, I've been married 3 times. You know, and that's not something that you go out and you admit to people, especially when you do marriage workshops, right? So, oh, boy, you know, I've been married 3 times. But, you know, my wife and I, Nydia and I, have been married now for 23 years, and we're in a very committed, wonderful, very, very happy relationship. And, yeah, when I was younger, I went through 2 marriages, and which is a, you know, it was a real travesty. You lose 2 families, and you finally figure out after that happens that the common denominator is you.
Yep.
You know? And that if you want to be happily married, then you got to change you. The real loser thinking in a marital relationship is thinking that if you can only get the other person to change, then you'll be happy. You know, but it's not true. You got to change yourself.
Right.
And, you know, and what I tell people when they say, well, you know, what am I going to do? And I say, well, the number one thing that you do is that you start focusing on doing the same things that you did when you're first in love. You go back and you start focusing on your spouse's needs. And you start focusing on their needs and doing everything that you possibly can to satisfy their needs and see if you can't get it turned around. And now, you know, you have to be a little bit careful with this because you can't keep score.
Uh-huh.
You can't say, oh, well, I went and picked up the laundry this week, and I went and picked up the kids from the daycare, and I took the kids to soccer practice, and I did this and I did that, and what did he do or what did she do, you know? You can't keep score. You have to go out and you have to do it. You have to do it just like when you're first in love. When you're first in love, you never kept score, right?
Right, but what about the people? I mean, I think there's people that maybe go into that thinking that they can sort of pretend it, or that they are doing a little bit more than what they normally would. So I think the first step sounds to me like, you know, be honest in that courting period of time that what you're doing is what you want to do and what you want to do for a very long time. Make sense?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You know, commitment is everything. Commitment to making a marriage work. My wife and I were on a cruise a number of years ago, and my wife went to hear a speaker on the cruise, and she afterwards, I was doing something else, and she came to talk to me, and said, boy, you've got to hear this speaker speak. She's gonna have some more seminars, so you got to go. And so I went, and was a woman who was quadriplegic and in a wheelchair in Carson. And she told her story about how her and her husband had been married 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they were on their third anniversary. They were out in the country doing one of their very favorite things to do. They were riding bikes, one of their very favorite places. And she was riding up ahead of him, and they heard this loud crack. And this crack was not a gun, but it was actually a tree that was falling, a huge six-ton tree, and it fell on her. And the only reason why she didn't die was because she had a cycling helmet on. The only thing that didn't get crushed in her body was her head.
Mm.
And so there they were. You know, they had to, you know, a helicopter had to, you know, medevac, had to get her out of there. And into the hospital and everything. And in just 3 short weeks, she was home. She was quadriplegic, but she was home. So here this young, newly married couple had to learn how to deal with this,
mm-hmm.
right? And this is pretty major, you know, to have that kind of a tree fall in your life. And one of the things that I talk about in my marriage workshops is that I say, you know, we all have some very bad news ahead of us. And that is there are going to be trees like that are going to fall in every single one of our lives.
Yeah.
No exceptions. I don't know what the trees are going to be going to fall in your life, but it's going to be multiple trees. You know, and they're going to fall in mine. I don't know what they are. You know, God spares us from letting us know those things that advance. It
mm-hmm.
scares to death, I guess. We've got to be prepared. And it's, you know, going back to what you say, you've got to have that kind of commitment that says, you know, when times are good, you know, I really need to build things up so that when the trees fall, we can handle it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think one of the ways that I've thought of in regards to that, and let me ask you if this makes sense, is to look at it from the standpoint of, I mean, as you're getting to that point of thinking, do I want to marry this person, is to say, if something like this were to occur, would they take care of me? And in the same sense, ask yourself, if something like this were to occur, you know, are you a person prepared enough that you're going to stay in it and take care of them? And I think if you can look at that and you can answer yes to both of those questions, then maybe you're on the right trail.
Well, you know, I don't know too many young people that could ask those questions of themselves. And if they did, I don't know if they could answer them honestly. One of the good things about being young is that you're really ignorant. You're stupid.
And believe me, I understand. And I think now I can ask those questions and I can think of them. But you're right. I mean, coming out of high school, that was not high on my list.
I mean, you know, when it comes down to it, if we really knew what we were getting into when we were, you know, young, as far as having kids, we probably wouldn't have any kids, you know. I think God made us stupid when we were young, so we go ahead and do what we need to do.
Well, let me interject one thing. I noticed that somebody had called in. Please call back in at that particular moment that the call was coming in, or at least when I saw the call. We were in the middle of a particular conversation. I didn't want to break it, but if you want to call back in, and we will put you on the air. So let me jump to another question. And because that was a listener, it reminded me that I have a couple of listener questions. And let me start with one that says, I am a 42-year-old woman who has been divorced twice. I want to be happily married for life. Unfortunately, in each of my marriages, after a few years, they seem to lose interest in me. And it says, things they do begin to bug me. I lose interest in them and find someone that pays better attention to me. How can I keep their interest in me so I don't have to look elsewhere? Now, I mean, it's amazing that this question came in. This was emailed in ahead of time, and this is very similar to what you were just saying.
What we just talked about, yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's the one person lost interest, and so what did she do? So she lost interest, and then so you find somebody else who has interest. You fall in love again, and then the same thing happens again. And it happens over and over and over again, and and this this woman is not alone. I think it was a woman, right?
Yeah, it says. I think it was. Yeah, it says a 42-year-old woman. And what was interesting as I read this is that things they do began to bug me. How does that fit in? How do you think that fits in? Because I think all of us will make jokes about the fact that, you know, well, we got into this and I didn't realize that the way in which they squeezed the toothpaste or the way in which they they left the clothes on the floor would bug me. It didn't bug them in the beginning.
Well, what, you know, from an advantage of getting a little bit older, I'm almost 60. Sounds old, doesn't it?
Yeah. No, not to me.
I feel like I'm in my 20s, maybe, you know, 27, 28. But and sometimes my wife says I act that way. So, but I feel very, very young, which is a fortunate thing. But from the advantage of getting a little bit older, one of the things you start to understand and you start to really integrate it, I think, is the knowledge that feelings don't emanate from the other person. They emanate from you.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're feeling irritated about something, that irritation is within you, not the other person.
Right.
You know, and I can prove that to you because, you know, there's an age-old story about two people in an elevator. One guy's in an elevator, and one guy gets in the elevator, and he says, "Oh, it's raining today. You know, this is awful. This is horrible. You know, this is terrible. You know, I planned to go golfing today, and then later I was going to take my kids fishing, and now my whole day is ruined because it's raining."
Mm-hmm.
So the elevator opens, the guy gets off, and another guy gets on, and he says, "Oh, it's just a wonderful day. It's, you know, this is such a blessing. You know, I'm a farmer, and my fields have needed rain for so very long, and finally we have rain. You know, I'm just so happy. What a blessed day this is," right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and so is life. I mean, you know, we decide what we're going to feel good about and what we're going to feel bad about. Feelings are just a choice, and we get hypnotized almost. Yeah, that's a good word for it. In fact, we get almost solidly hypnotized into thinking that, you know, what the other person is doing is bad, it's irritating, it's awful, it's terrible. Wait a minute, we're making that determination, right?
Right.
That irritation with it is within us.
Right. Well, I think this kind of goes along the lines of what you mentioned in your book about the marital law of reciprocity. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the marital law of reciprocity says that however you consistently treat your spouse is how your spouse is ultimately going to treat you. Okay. And this doesn't play out on any individual day. It doesn't work on any individual day because there's individual exceptions to it. But over time, if you are kind and loving to your spouse is going to end up being kind and loving to you. And if you are critical of your spouse and unloving to you, act in unloving ways to your spouse, that's basically how they're going to relate back to you again.
Now, but how does that work where at times, you know, at human beings, we do have people that are more givers and more takers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at what point, if you're in that position and you're the giver and the other one starts to fall into that role of taker, you know, maybe something that that they chose not to share during the courtship,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
at what point, you know, do you draw the line, or is that the point in where you bring counseling in?
you know, and perhaps, you know, I'm not one to say that all marriages are made in heaven and that mm-hmm. you ought to stay together, because there are some incredibly loving people who are married to incredibly unloving people. And that very, very loving person continues to be very, very loving, and the other person continues to be unloving. I mean, that is the scenario that happens. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's, that's just pretty undeniable. And, you know, at that point, you've got to make some decisions. Do I want to stay in this marriage where I keep giving and he keeps taking, or vice versa, you know? Or do I want to, you know, get out of it and get into a relationship with someone else? But you have to be a little bit honest with yourself. In fact, I think, you know, you ought to be a lot honest with yourself at that point.
Right.
Find, figure out whether it's actually true or not. You know, have you, you know, really focused on the other person? Have you really, you know, focused on taking care of that other person's needs, and there's nothing that's coming back the other way?
Well, do you see us as a society figuring this out? I mean, one would think that that as we get smarter, we would figure this out, but yet the statistics don't seem to suggest that. So would that mean that are we becoming just more selfish, and or we're bailing out too soon? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think for any individual, it doesn't matter what other people are doing or not doing. You know, I think every one of us has to make our own minds up, and ultimately we do. You know, we have to look at the relationship that we're in and say, you know, do I want to stay in this relationship? And, you know, and some people answer yes to that, even though it's a lousy relationship, because, you know, they're getting something out of it. I know one couple that's been married over 60 years, very closely related to them, and they get along like, you know, cats and dogs. Yet they stayed married for over 60 years, and so obviously they're getting something out of it, aren't they? You know.
Yeah, I was going to say when you said I thought you were going somewhere where you were going to say, you know, how they've managed to, you know, to focus on the love or focus on the positive. I thought we were going, and then when you said they get along like cats and dogs, and I'm going.
They focus on the negative about each other and all of that, but they continue to stay married and have all these years, and so there's something in there. I mean, you know, we all have to. What I'm saying, Ellen, is that we all have to make these decisions for ourselves, and I kind of disagree with the things like some of the pop psychologists do on TV and on the radio, and they take a person's situation and a few facts in that situation, and they make some pretty harsh determinations very quickly. Mm-hmm. I make some judgments pretty quickly and say, well, you should do this or you should do that. You should get out of this relationship or, you know, or you should do this. And I don't think you can do that, because relationships are far more complex than what you can understand in just a few sound bites. People have to make decisions for themselves, regardless of what anybody else is saying or doing.
All right. Okay, we're going to take a break. We are going to be back with Dr. Larry Koenig, and we are talking about being happily married for life.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
All right, we're back, and again, we are talking with Dr. Larry Koenig, and the subject is Happily Married for Life. I've read about half the book, so I've got just enough to still have questions. And one of the questions that I have is, You mentioned something in there about, you know, good marriages having a cheerleader. Now, what do you mean by good marriages having one cheerleader, but great marriages having two?
You know, I got to say, you know, this makes a really, really big difference in our lives to have someone to encourage us. And that's what a cheerleader does. They encourage you. And I used to, years ago, I had a program called Up With Youth. And there were big youth rallies, 400 or 500 kids on a Saturday. And there was, these programs were sponsored by big hospitals and television stations around the country. And the whole program was on teaching kids about self-esteem, how to feel good about yourself. And, you know, that was a good thing to do. And I hope a lot of kids got benefit out of those programs. But as I've gotten a bit older, I've come to see self-esteem as a really limited concept. You know, it's really easy to feel good about yourself as long as you feel good about yourself. But what's essential to feel good about yourself, what's absolutely essential, and what they don't tell you in the self-esteem movement, is that you have to have people in your life to encourage you. Without having someone in your life to encourage you, you know, it's a harsh, tough world out there, and it's very hard to feel good about yourself if you don't have somebody like that. And how that applies to marriages is that, you know, traditionally, in the traditional marriages in America, back in the dark ages of the 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, the focus was on the wife encouraging the husband. And the cliche was that behind every successful man, there was a woman.
Right. Right.
And why was he so successful? Well, because he had his wife there to encourage him.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked well, probably, you know, through the 40s, 50s, 60s. But now we're into a different era. And in this different era that we're in, where both husbands and wives are out there, they're working, if not working, moms are involved with the kids and being a stay-at-home mom and doing all kinds of different things. And she needs encouragement, too, whether she's out there working or whether she's, you know, staying at home being a stay-at-home mom. I got one daughter, so I got four kids, and, oh, man, you know, she got a big job with those four kids. And every single one of us human beings, doesn't matter what we're doing, for us to be happy, for us to feel good about ourselves, it's essential to have someone to encourage us,
right?
You know, to be our cheerleader, to say, good job, you know, good job on this, good job on that, and, you know, and not on the big things, but just on the daily things, you know,
mm-hmm.
Encouraging us, you know, and saying, gee, I know how tough it is for you to have to, you know, get the kids off to school in the morning and go pick them up and take them all the lessons and the soccer and all that. Good job. You know, I really appreciate you doing that.
Right. But what happens if you have just one cheerleader? I mean, is that the biggest danger point right there? Because are they, is that one cheerleader eventually going to just wear down? You know, like, wait a minute, you know,
culture that we live in right now is that, you know, there's more people out there, especially what we're talking about here, I guess, is women, but it can be some men too, where you're going after a while, you're going, hey, wait a minute, I'm doing all the giving, you know, you're doing all the taking. Now, you know, in my original formula, though, that we talked about is the law of reciprocity, in most cases, that does turn around. It does turn around. I mean, if you consistently give to the other person is going to give, you know, start giving back to you. And if they don't, though, after a period of time, then, you know, that's where the danger is. Where you say, wait a minute, you know, this is no longer worth it because I'm giving all the giving.
Right. And it sounds like these are things and that we need to learn before we get married. In other words, if people can take the time to learn this about the person, learn about the fact that there is some reciprocity in that, we're probably going to have a much better chance at having a successful and very happy marriage, or as you say, remaining happily married for life.
You know, I'm I'm pretty much of an optimist when it comes to life, but I'm a pretty pessimist, pretty pessimistic thinking about young people learning about this stuff. Because young people, you know, I give you an example. You know, one of my daughters, I got four daughters and a son, and one of my daughters, you know, are happily married, and we're talking about that. They've been married, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, we're just talking about divorce, how many people get divorced, and my daughter said to me, oh, well, we would never get divorced, you know. I said, well, you know, how do you know that? She said, oh, well, because we're just so happily married, you know, and we just love each other so much. Well, love's a wonderful thing, but, you know, if you don't do things on a daily basis to cause the other person to feel loved, then that love is good chances that love is going to be fleeting. It's going to go away. But back to what I was saying, though, about my pessimism, though, about young couples learning about this stuff, we human beings typically learn things out of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And we are not motivated to learn a doggone thing until we're in pain. And it's that pain that motivates us. Otherwise, we just come along and we're just kind of like my daughter saying, oh, everything's wonderful with the world because we love each other so much. And, you know, they've never had any trees fall in their life. And that's good. That's wonderful. And you hope like heck that when those trees start falling in their life, that they'll be prepared to deal with them.
Well, I think that leads quite well into another question that was emailed into us. And this one reads, my parents divorced when I was young. It seems like all of my friends' parents divorced too. As a junior in college who would love to find the right girl, how do I get beyond this belief that no matter what I do, a marriage is destined to fail? Even the others I talk to about this seem to think, just have fun, be selfish, because it doesn't work anyway. Wow.
Yeah, I was at a wedding a couple of weeks ago, and I was shocked. You know, this was a young couple getting married in their early 30s. A young surgeon, his wife is a nurse. I mean, they've got the world by the tail, right? You know what I mean, and they love each other so much in the first marriage. But I was talking to some of the other young couples that were there, and I heard a term that I'd never heard before. I was shocked by it, Alan. I don't know if you've heard about it, but the term was my starter spouse. I said, what do you mean, starter spouse? What does that mean? They said, well, now, you know, young people talk about you just get married the first time, and if it doesn't work, it's all right. You can almost expect that it's not going to work, and that's just called your starter spouse.
Well, but you know what? They did a TV show on that subject. It was a series called The Starter Wife.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard about that.
No, I didn't watch it, but I mean, I saw the trailers and the previews when it was becoming, you know, a series, but that was the first that I had heard of it as well, and it was called The Starter Wife, and I guess it refers to, I don't know.
Well, let's answer your listener's question, if we may.
Right.
You know, and I've got to say that, that my wife and I, you know, I very fortunately grew up in a home where my parents had a very loving, wonderful marriage, and they were married for over 63 years, and boy, they were wonderful models. I couldn't think of a better model to grow up in, you know, for marriage. I mean, they're absolutely wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife's parents were the opposite. I mean, they stayed married, but boy, just a really bad example. You know, a good example of how not to be married, right?
Okay.
And so I was asked my wife the other day, in fact, you know, said, you know, how is it that you're able to escape this and be the loving wife that you are when you had, you know, such an opposite role model? And she truly said, well, you know, I knew what I didn't want. I knew what I did not want. And so I said, you know, that's not what I want. And she said, you know, I was around other couples and I saw the happily married people, and I thought, you know, this is what I want. good role modeling didn't save me from having two bad marriages, but my wife's bad role modeling didn't stop her from having a wonderful marriage, you know, because we've been married 20 years now. And in fact, we were at an event on just this Friday night. Night, we went to this wonderful cooking class in Natchez, Mississippi, at the High Cotton establishment, a five-star chef, and he brings in 14 people and seven couples, and so you're with these people, you don't know anybody, and you're with them 3 hours, and you have just this wonderful time together, and you have this wonderful meal together, and you even learn some stuff about cooking. You drink a lot of fine wine, and you just have a great time together. But this one guy came up to my wife at the end of the 3 or 4 hours together, and he said to her, "Now," he said, "you and your husband are newlyweds, aren't you?" And she said, "Well, no, we've been married 23 years. And he said, "You got to be kidding me. You know, you act, you look just like newlyweds, you know."
See?
And yeah, we do, because we continue to do the same things that we did when we were first in love.
Well, I think that's a great point. So, I mean, what I hear you saying is that, you know, for these young people that are saying, you know, why bother, change it. You know, if you have something that you like and you want to model after it, that's great. But just like other things and other things that have changed from generation to generation, if you see something you don't like, you know, then decide that's not
absolutely
what I'm going to do,
you know,
and use it for the learning experience it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when you use the words "why bother," there's a lot of reason to why bother to be in a committed relationship. People that are in a committed, loving relationship live longer, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not sure exactly what the statistics are, but it's somewhere, I think, between 3 and 10 years longer. You live longer, and I would have to say that, my gosh, the enjoyment in life of having somebody that you're with every day that you just absolutely love. I mean, when you think about it, those listeners out there that can remember back when you were first in love, and some of you, you know, I'm sure aren't first in love right now. I mean, that's one of the most wonderful feelings in the whole wide world. And
sure,
I'm here to tell you that you can maintain that feeling. It does not have to go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what they're saying here, or what this young person is saying, young man is saying, is the whole thing about why bother, I think, is that they're almost saying we can't beat the statistics. And so I like what you're saying from the standpoint is just you can beat the statistics, but here's what you've got to do, and you've got to focus on that person and look at what the other people have done that you've seen that failed, and just don't do it, you know, and recognize what happened, you know, recognize if it was a situation, even if it was a generation before where the, you know, one parent worked and was not home or whatever it is. So yeah, I like what you're saying, you know, learn from it and focus on them and keep them happy so that you're not part of those statistics. Turn it around.
You've got to be conscious. And one of my very good friends, I don't get to see him but much once every 1 or 2 years because he lives up north. And I won't say where because I don't want to identify him, but he was a very, very good friend for years. My wife and I were good friends with he and his wife. When we went up north, we'd always go see he and his wife, take them out to dinner, and we'd have a delightful time, sometimes spend 3 or 4 days together at their house. This one time we called up and we said, "Oh, we'd love to go out to dinner, you know, and we're going to be up there." And so we set a time and a date, and we agreed to meet at the restaurant, and my friend walked in alone.
Mm-hmm.
"You know, where's your wife? You know, where's Vicky at?" And not her real name, by the way. "And where's Vicky?" And he said, "Well, you know, I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're getting a divorce. And we just thought it would be better if you know, I came by myself." And I said, "Well, look, you know, I just finished writing this manuscript. I just got it done on Happily Married for Life. It's got all kinds of strategies in it, you know, to repair marriages, you know, and be happily married. And, you know, you can turn this around. You know, can I give it to you?" And he said, "Larry," he said, said, I couldn't stand to read it. And I said, why couldn't you stand to read it? And he said, well, because I couldn't stand the pain to read about the things that I should have done for the last 20 years.
Oh.
You know? And it's true about so many of us and marriages that fall apart because we live unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
We do everything to cause a person to fall in love with us and to marry us. You know, we do all those things, and then we get married and we stop doing them. Why? Because, well, we don't need them anymore, we think. We think, well, you know, I'm already married, and so I'll just, you know, we just become unconscious. And we become unconscious of the other person's needs, and we focus on our own needs, and bang, all of a sudden there, you know, the other person says, I don't want to be married to you anymore. And we go, what do you mean? You know, what a shock. Why didn't you tell me? You know, that person says, well, I tried. You know,
right,
I tried,
and they may not have done it with words, but they were starting to do it with their actions. And I think what you're saying also kind of goes back to my thought, which has to do with authenticity. You know, be authentic with what you're doing before you get married, because that's what you should continue. And if you're not being authentic, and if you're just doing it to get somebody, you're probably not going to carry it through. Let me do a couple of things real quick, because I looked up. I just glanced up. We have about 5 minutes. And I think anybody that listens to the show knows I really love to leave things on some very positive notes, but also on some very educational notes. But I want to make sure that people know how to get the book. So if you can tell us if there's a website or where they can get the book, please share that with us.
Probably my most popular website is smartdiscipline.org. And we've got all my different books on there. My parenting stuff and the marriage book is on there. Yeah.
All right. So again, that's smartdiscipline.org. You can go there for the book is Happily Married for Life. But obviously, if you are happily married, but you're also dealing with some kid issues, you'll find some other things there as well. One of the questions I wanted to make sure and ask is, what are some of the ways that couple can express their love daily? What are some of the little things that they can do that maybe they've forgotten? Maybe they were doing it before, they were doing it during the courtship. But like you said, you know, they just kind of went into, you know, automatic mode and they're not doing them. What are some of the things that they can do that they can start today to improve their marriage?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things I have people do in the workshops, and it's a very worthwhile thing. It's in the book, too. But it's you know, where you sit down with one another and when things are going well. And, you know, and you make a list for the other person of, you know, have people do a sentence completion thing, and you can even do this at home, and it gives you the answer that you're looking for here, Alan, where you say, when we were first in love, you know, this is what you did that made me feel loved. You know, I feel loved when you blah, 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 you know, and you just keep finishing some sentences, you know, so your spouse knows, you know, what you did, you know, to make them feel loved. Because, you know, it's somewhat individual. I mean, I could give you a list of things of what makes me feel loved. I mean, you know, I love it when my wife encourages me and when she says thank you for things. And I love it when we share love and or laughter and delight on a daily basis. And when she says she's sorry about things. And what's big for me, too, is, you know, expression of affections. You know, but it's different for every single one of us.
Right.
And what it
sounds like what you're talking about, which I know you also touch on in the book, and again, because we only have a couple of minutes, but it sounds like you're also talking about either learning or remembering what your lover's dialect is, what their language is, what works for them.
Yeah, because everyone feels love differently and they express love differently, and we tend to want the other person or expect the other person to express their love to us in the same way that we like to express it.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be get us into trouble because, for example, you know, one person, what might be the most meaningful way of expressing love is through physical affection, okay, hugs and kisses and making love and stuff like that. Another person, what might be the most meaningful thing is spending time together. You know, or maybe presence. things like that, doing things for the other person. And so we get in trouble. We miss each other sometimes where, you know, we go buy a person a present because we like to get presents, and the other person, they didn't want a present. They wanted to spend Saturday night together.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so you got to answer some of those things. And, of course, that's, you know, that's somewhat what the book is about, is helps people answer those questions for each other.
Absolutely. Well, again, the book is Happily Married for Life. It is by Dr. Larry Koenig. And, Larry, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. And I certainly agree that if we can focus on this, if we start modeling a happy marriage, we're going to pass it on to our kids. They're going to be able to see that. If there's less stress in the marriage, it's probably going to allow us to spend more time with our kids as well, which then takes us to the whole point is that we now have a happy family. Again, thank you so much, and I look forward to completing the book.
All right, my pleasure. Thanks so much, Alan.
You're welcome. Bye now.
Bye.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.